2024 was a big year for politics in Wisconsin, and this upcoming year is going to be no different. Statewide, on the docket so far, is an upcoming Wisconsin Supreme Court open seat election and deciding the next state biennial budget. Joining us now are WPR politics reporters Rich Kramer and Anyavin Wagtendonk to help break down what we should be keeping an eye on going into the new year. Rich, Anya, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right, so first thing right off the bat we should talk about is the state Supreme Court race that is coming up in Wisconsin. That will be held during the spring election during April. Rich, can you tell us a little bit about what's going on here?
Well, let me just say, if you thought election season was over, you were sadly mistaken. So in just 4 months or so, Wisconsinites will be going to the poll for a pretty significant battle over ideological control of the state Supreme Court. The election will determine who will replace retiring liberal Justice Anne Walsh Bradley, who's been on the court since 1995. And the two candidates we have so far are former Republican Attorney General Brad Schimmel, who is now a Waukesha County Circuit Court judge, and Dane County Judge Susan Crawford, who has worked as an attorney for Democrats and Planned Parenthood. This election will be held in April 2025, as you mentioned, but Schimmel has been campaigning since November 2023. On the stump, he's accused liberal justices on the court of going rogue by focusing more on politics than the law. A social media account with his campaign has called Crawford a radical judge, and a theme of the campaign appears to be, quote, stop the madness. Crawford entered the race in June, and she framed her campaign as a chance to preserve the current court majority, and which she says will focus on following the law and protecting constitutional rights.
Rich, can you remind us just a little bit about what's at stake in this election?
So if we go back in time, not even that long ago, to April 2023, there was the Supreme Court race between current Justice Janet Protasiewicz and former conservative Justice Dan Kelly. Protasiewicz defeated Kelly, and that gave liberals control of the court for the first time in 15 years. And in that last Supreme Court election, there were primary races too. Both Protasiewicz and Kelly faced challengers. This time it appears the parties are trying to avoid that. So some of the stakes. Since liberals have taken control of the court, they've had some pretty major decisions. Around 1 year ago, the liberal majority ruled that Republican-drawn legislative voting maps were unconstitutional. That redistricting case overturned a ruling from the conservative majority just 2 years prior. As a result of the liberal majority's order, Republican lawmakers passed maps drawn by Democratic Governor Tony Evers, and that's just something that wouldn't have happened otherwise. And then also this July, ahead of the November election, the liberal majority had another pretty big case which overturned a ban on the use of absentee ballot drop boxes in Wisconsin elections. And that ban had been in place for 2 years and was put there by the court's previous conservative majority.
You know, the state's high court is going to hear a number of high-profile cases again heading into 2025. Can you just give us a highlight of maybe a few of those cases you're keeping an eye on?
Yeah, the court has already heard some oral arguments on some of these, and there's just a whole bunch of other cases that I'm not even getting into here. But some of the big ones that I'm going to be keeping an eye on, there's a case about whether a law passed in 1849 bans most abortions in Wisconsin. That's probably the highest profile case. Another one will determine whether a GOP-controlled legislative committee violated the state constitution by blocking an agency rule that would have banned conversion therapy. The caveat is the conversion therapy ban is currently in place, but this committee has temporarily barred that ban. There's also a case about whether Wisconsin's top elections official, Megan Wolf, should be allowed to hold over in her position amid Republican efforts to fire her, and whether a line item budget veto that increased school funding for 400 years violates the state constitution. So those are some of the big ones that I'll be watching.
So 2025 is also a mark when state lawmakers need to put together the next biennial budget here in Wisconsin. And this time has always been notoriously difficult in the state. And there's always a lot of going back and forth between Republicans and Democrats Anya, do we have any reason to believe that this time around is going to be any different?
Yeah, the budget is one of the biggest pieces of legislation that the legislature works on. It's essentially a document that states what are the funding priorities for the state of Wisconsin over the next 2 years. And there's a couple of reasons for those partisan fights that you mentioned. It usually boils down to kind of philosophical differences about the size of government and whether to spend the state surplus. But I think also people don't necessarily realize that the budget is where policy proposals can also play out, right? You propose something by proposing funding for it. And so there are some policies that Republicans and Democrats are just never going to see eye to eye on. So, for example, Evers has always proposed legalizing marijuana in his budget, recreational and medicinal. And Republican leadership has made clear that they will never support full legalization. So that's one of those things that will just, Evers will present it, it'll most likely get cut, and then we'll get a final document that Evers will then need to sign. But likewise, he has the power to partially veto the budget, so he can remove things that the Joint Finance Committee includes. We've already heard of one prospective veto, which is that Evers says he won't support a return to the office mandate for government workers. But unlike the U.S. Congress, Wisconsin has to pass a budget. We don't have the option to go to like a government shutdown. And so this does always kind of resolve itself.
So you mentioned marijuana in there, and we know that that's not going to be a full legalization that Governor Evers proposes. It's probably not going to get passed. Is there any room maybe on medical marijuana? It seems like there might be.
Yeah, medicinal marijuana is one area that there's been some bipartisan support, but the devil is kind of in the details on that. So, for example, last session, Republicans proposed a very limited kind of state-run medical dispensary program that just wasn't particularly well received and didn't move forward. Democratic proposals are always much more broad than Republicans are going to support, and Republicans hold the majority, and so they essentially will dictate how that plays out. And I'm certainly hearing from Democrats that they think that there will be more bipartisanship because they have a larger share of both chambers of the legislature. That's thanks to the new legislative maps that Rich talked about a moment ago. But Democrats are still in the minority. And so it does remain to be seen whether their new numbers mean more bipartisanship or, frankly, whether there will be new tensions because of how that fight over redistricting went down.
Rich, let's turn to you now. There is a case that is likely to eventually be heard by the Wisconsin State Supreme Court that revolves around Act 10. Act 10 has been a huge issue within the past year. Can you remind us about what Act 10 did, what it is?
Absolutely. So Act 10 was a really big deal because essentially it was Republicans who controlled the legislature, the governor's mansion, and the Supreme Court who decided to severely restrict collective bargaining abilities for public sector unions. But the caveat is they exempted some unions from the law, essentially police and fire unions. Now, this lawsuit that is currently working its way through the state court system is saying, well, that's unconstitutional, that because it's basically setting up different classes of workers. It's an equal protection issue. So it depends on timing, whether the Supreme Court and the liberal majority will have a chance to look at this. This year, a Dane County judge did overturn a lot of Act 10, but he's put a hold on that ruling and is considering staying it for a longer period of time while the legislature appeals. They've already filed an appeal. And at any point, one of the parties, the legislature or these unions that filed the lawsuit, could ask the state Supreme Court to essentially bypass the Court of Appeals and take it up right away. So we can't know for sure how the Supreme Court justices will rule on a lawsuit once it gets there. It does seem pretty obvious that it's heading in that direction. But what we do know is that in 2014, the Supreme Court's former conservative majority upheld the law. We also know that Justice Ann Walsh Bradley wrote the dissent in that case, but she may or may not be on the court by the time the lawsuit works its way there because she's announced retirement. So there's a lot of unanswered questions, but it does seem pretty clear that this lawsuit is going to work its way right up to the Supreme Court.
All right, Anya, something that's been on my mind a lot lately and been on the mind of a lot of people has been the topic of gun legislation, especially after the shooting at Abundant Life Christian School in Madison. And usually after these shootings happen, there's kind of a back and forth. There's a talk about legislation. Is there something that's being talked about right now in Wisconsin?
Yeah, Democrats have been a bit more vocal about legislation out of the gate. Congressman Mark Pocan had a really full-throated call for national legislation. He said it was, quote, time for my Republican colleagues to grow a backbone and put our children above the gun lobby, which was a very forceful statement. Dane County Executive Melissa Agard, who used to be in the state legislature, also called for a few state-level policies, also called for national action. And there have been some gun-related proposals in the past that have had bipartisan support, and those have had to do with safe storage and particularly the overlap between gun access and mental health. And so I'll be really interested to see how that conversation plays out.
That was Rich Kramer and Anya Van Wagtendonk, both WPR politics reporters. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.